My name is Val Amsden, and I'm your host of This Side of the Grass. Throughout my experience with the death of very close loved ones, I learned that not many people are prepared for the inevitable. Someday we will all die. On this podcast, I hope to normalize these conversations about dying, not only so we can be prepared, but more importantly, so that we can truly live every single day with purpose and intention that we are blessed to be here on this side of the grass. Welcome to This Side of the Grass. I'm your host, Val Amsden. Thank you for joining me. I have a hunch we have some maybe new listeners this week because for the first time, we have a couple of guests. You're not just going to hear my voice. So I'd like to introduce Tim Vossen and Bethany Winters, and I will have each of you introduce yourselves. Bethany, why don't we start with you?
I'm Bethany Winters. I've been in the commercial and life insurance industry for going on 14 years. I'm really excited to be here today.
Thank you. Tim?
Yes, Tim Vossen. I've been with the same commercial insurance company, life insurance company, for 20 years. It'll be 20 years in June. Kind of probably have a different perspective than both of you, having not really experienced any tragedy in my own life, but been able to help people kind of solve the insurance need when it comes to the conversation of life and death and life insurance. So
yes.
Excited to talk about that today.
Well, I'm so glad you're here because, as I've let you know on previous episodes that you haven't heard yet, but will eventually as they are published, I've talked a lot about my own experience, and there's nothing wrong with that. But within my experience, a lot of questions have come up. I've been able to find answers, but I am not a subject matter expert. And you two are subject matter experts on life insurance. And I think something that some people think about as they are preparing for what is to come is life insurance. But I think especially in an unexpected situation, to me, I'm imagining, you know, the Facebook posts when something happens and there's a tragedy. And one of the first things you see is a GoFundMe set up, right? Mm-hmm. For funeral expenses, for medical bills, for maybe it's a salary of someone who was unexpectedly lost and won't be able to have an income in their family. So, Bethany, you and I just met today, and you shared with me that there is some grief and loss in your history. Would you be willing to share a little bit about your background?
Yeah, so I grew up in a very traditional family of four, had an older sister. My dad worked, my mom was a stay-at-home mom, and she actually homeschooled the two of us. And
okay.
My sister is 5 years older than I was, her first weekend home from college and the first week of eighth grade for me, my mom had a massive brain aneurysm and was in the hospital for 9 days before we're standing there around her hospital bed saying goodbye and taking her off life support. So that, you know, when you're a 13-year-old girl and you lose your mom, I like to tell people that there are a lot of facts that follow a tragedy and there's a lot of feelings. And the feelings we can all kind of imagine what you go through. But if you haven't been through it, you can imagine them, but you don't understand the impact and just what that really does to your mindset throughout the rest of your life and kind of that lens in which you experience your reality. So the facts that I can tell you after that was that my dad worked full time. And my mom was the one that paid the bills and kind of managed that side of things. Usually in a marriage, there's one spouse that kind of takes responsibility for that. Well, in ours, it was my mom. It took my dad 2 weeks to find their checkbook.
Wow.
Okay. So, I mean, that's the facts of the situation, right? It's like now you've got someone who's trying to figure out what to do with their daughter who has to go back to college and just missed her second and third full week of college ever. A daughter that's starting eighth grade with she's not enrolled anywhere. What am I going to do for school? And, you know, luckily we had some amazing.
Because you were still homeschooling.
I was still homeschooling.
Okay.
We had some amazing family friends that stepped in and basically finished out homeschooling me through eighth grade. And then But I mean, it's like for me at that age, I didn't just lose my parent. I lost my teacher, and my entire world changed because, yeah. I, you know, it's like for kids, like when there's a tragedy, I think all of us around are like, oh, I mean, it'll just be good for people to get back into their routine. Well, I didn't have a routine anymore. So everything was different. So like, I mean, I experienced it to just a whole different degree than yeah. I think most people do. So that was really, really tough. But the other fact was that my dad actually had life insurance on my stay-at-home mom. And it, guys, I can tell you that if that had not been the case, I would not be sitting here right now. I would not have probably made it through college. I was not playing sports. Okay. You know, usually, like, you're going to need a full-time parent to be able to run you around and that yes. stuff. And my dad was now full-time working and trying to, you know, manage just life with
the household,
girls and, the household yes. and all this stuff. So scholarships for that and then for academia were just not in the cards for me when it got to college. I mean, I was very blessed that he had life insurance, that he was able to send me to a private high school, which, you know, that was something that was very near and dear to my parents' heart.
Okay.
Obviously, we were home; they were homeschooling yes. us for a reason. And so for him to be able to still have that safety net to at least send me to a private education for high school was very good for him and for us. But it, that gave him a lot more capabilities of doing those types of things. But some of the feeling stuff that ties in with the facts of the matter was that he worked, you know, he had to work a half an hour away or 40 minutes away. And the earliest he could drop me off at school was 6:30, and school got, but it started at 8:10. Mm-hmm. So I was sitting at school for an hour and a half in the morning, you know, kind of by myself. And then, school got out at 3:10 and he didn't get off work until 5. So he was trying to coordinate, you know, pick up and carpools and all this stuff for me until I could drive myself. But the feelings of that was that people don't think about is that I spent a lot of days sitting outside of school on a bench or on a curb watching moms come and pick up yes. their kids. And just feeling what that grief and loss was for me. So in the circle of work of what I do now, is I get to help people work through the facts that when there is a loss, even if it's with a non-breadwinner in your family, and obviously I talk about the wife all the time, what does she have, right? It's there's all of these things that happen after you lose someone that whether they're bringing home an income, there is going to be cost associated with this. And like, what do you want for your kids?
Yeah.
What do you want for your family, for your spouse, and so on and so forth? So it's just a lot of different components that you get to plan for if you're planning for it ahead of time.
Right? Well, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Even though it's been a long time,
yes,
it still comes to the surface. Mm-hmm. And I think that that must resonate with the people you're talking to because you have a personal story that you can share. So for the listener who may not understand, let's start at the beginning of what is life insurance? So what is it and why do you need it? So Tim, you want to take that one?
I'll hop in. I'm probably less emotional when it comes to this topic, but I do have such a strong belief because being in the business so long, now we've seen everything happen.
Sure.
So what is life insurance? It's very simple. It's if you pass away, the insurance company's giving money to whomever the beneficiary, whoever, usually it's the policyholder or owner, to help cover unexpected or expected expenses. So it comes in at a time where finances are going to be tough, and hopefully it reduces the amount of stress and anxiety related to money when you have so many other important things that you should be focusing on, like as Bethany talked about, her dad trying to figure out schooling and all that stuff.
Yes.
If you're worried about where your money's coming from, it takes away from being able to probably grieve and
oh, absolutely.
Work with each other. So yeah. The very simple piece is it provides money when somebody goes away. And money doesn't solve things, but it certainly allows you to focus on what matters.
Sure. So as someone is looking at buying life insurance, there are two kinds of life insurance. Will you talk to what those are and the payment structure? So you're not just going to give me money. I mean, I'm going to have to pay for that policy. So yeah.
He's a good guy.
If and when the time comes,
right,
there will be money that comes back to me.
So I'll start, and then I'm sure Bethany will kind of hop in.
Perfect.
I would say there are multiple kinds of life insurance, but it kind of can be broken down into two main types, which is temporary insurance, where it's purely just the insurance cost. So this is where I understand insurance really well, where it's a big actuarial puzzle, not emotions and all the stuff with death.
We're going to call it facts, not facts. Feelings. That's
facts.
Where we
facts, not facts, feelings.
Not
yes.
Feelings part of the conversation.
But it comes down to what are the odds that somebody's going to die? And the odds are very, very, very low that between 20 and 55 you're going to pass away, and then your odds become a lot higher at those ages. And so temporary insurance or term insurance basically just takes the insurance risk over a period of time and takes your age and health and goes, hey, here's what the cost for insurance is. And it usually just averages it out. So, for example, maybe a 10-year term policy, you're guaranteed your health rating and the pricing for 10 years. And it's very inexpensive. So somebody who's in their 20s could get $1 million of insurance for $500 to $1,000 a year, assuming they're moderately healthy.
Okay.
And so that's the temporary side of things. And you can have longer terms, and it costs a little bit more because it's going to average your age and health over that 20-year period. But life insurance is really interesting. Is it's all based on when you do the application as to what your health rating is.
Yes.
And so in your 20s, people aren't thinking about buying life insurance for when they're 40 or 50 and your checkbook says, here's what I can afford.
Yes.
And so you're oddly making decisions that have massive impacts down the road based on what your checkbook says when you're 25.
Yeah, you can't maybe afford $1,000 a year when you're 23. That's a big expense for something that is not likely. But what you're saying is that's when they're going to do the health physical and say, hey, you are super healthy, so we're going to hold this rate for as long as your policy goes.
Yep.
Correct. And then at the end of that duration of time for a temporary policy, you either underwrite for new insurance. Some policies will have the ability to convert it into permanent, which is the other option. And permanent insurance basically is insurance that goes on forever. It's going to go on until you die, assuming you're paying the premiums. Usually it's structured so that you're putting, beyond just the cost of insurance, you're putting extra money into an account that is building a cash value.
And that's the permanent option.
That is the permanent option. And you need to do that because once you get over 60, 70, 80 years old, the cost of insurance is very high.
Sure.
And so if you can put money into an account in your 20s, 30s, 40s that gains interest, when the cost of insurance goes up, there's money in the account to help pay for some of the rising cost of insurance that you couldn't otherwise pay. So basically, it's a savings account within an insurance policy that's growing with the idea that in your 60s, 70s, 80s, it offsets an expense you probably can't afford at that point.
And in the meantime, if there is a situation where you do unexpectedly pass away, or if there's a terminal illness or something that happens during that term of that policy, during the period of time, you don't lose your insurance.
That's correct. Right. Yeah.
So the thing that we talk with younger consumers about a lot is just locking in a health rating. And so Tim mentioned it earlier, that a lot of these term policies where essentially you're renting your insurance for a time period, right? Depending on the policy type, they can have a rider on them that allows you to convert them into permanent at that same health rating that you got.
Okay.
That's the type of term insurance that you want to buy, because you can lock in that health rating, pay the renter's fee, so to speak, that is more affordable during those younger years, but then you can start to convert even just a portion of your total death benefit into a permanent policy as time allows and as you've got the money to start kind of squirreling that cash away. There's a lot of, you know, parents that we talk to about potentially locking in a policy to just, like, get a health rating confirmed for their kids.
So they would actually take a policy out on the kiddos?
Yes.
Okay.
And so you can, there's juvenile policies that you can take out on kids under 18. And then, again, though, it locks in that health rating for them. So those are just really great gifts that you can give to your kids, because unfortunately, you know, we've seen it all in 20 years of Tim's experience and 15 of mine, is that kids get sick too,
yeah,
right? And it's really, really hard. But like, when you can say, at least we know they've got this and nobody can take it away from them, the insurance company can't take it back. They already gave it to them. That's a huge blessing, right?
So. Yeah. And even if that child survives but has an illness, they're locked in with that original health rating, right, through the rest of their lives, assuming they continue.
That's right.
Okay.
Premiums. Yep.
Yes.
In all this conversation, what's really interesting is people think, oh, if I buy life insurance, I'm not going to die, which is why insurance companies sell term insurance, because more than likely you're not going to die. But people kind of get afraid that their health rating, they're going, oh, it'll never go away. I'll always be preferred. And it's especially when you're young, you're invincible. But where it becomes very factual is that, let's say you have a little heart arrhythmia, or pick some random, you have Crohn's disease, or you have something, it probably won't kill you, okay? And when I say probably won't kill you, let's say your odds of dying from that are 0.0001.
Sure.
But because you have it, it goes from 0.0001 to 0.0002.
Okay.
That just doubled the insurance risk.
Okay.
And so that's where your ratings kind of change, and you go, you don't need to have a cancer or a heart attack or something to not be able to get insurance. You just need a life event that changes your insurability costs.
So I'm glad you brought that up, Tim. So the second time I went through underwriting to get more life insurance was when I was pregnant with my first. And my cholesterol was all out of whack during pregnancy.
Sure.
And so I got a worse rating than I did before that. And I know, because I do this for a living, I'm like, that's fine. I'm going to take this now and I can re-underwrite for this same policy and it can only get better. They can only give me a better rating. So I think that's another really important thing to tell people, is that we have folks that hold off because they're like, I'm going to quit smoking. And I'm like, if the cost of smoking cigarettes has not stopped you from smoking, the cost of reducing your life insurance by quitting smoking is not also going to get you to do that.
This might hurt your membership.
Yeah.
I wouldn't worry about the cost of smoking. How about every other thing that goes along?
Yes.
Sorry if there's smokers in the room.
No, but that's really interesting, because one of my questions was going to be, what resistance, which I'm assuming there's a fair amount, mm-hmm, because let's be honest, talking about life insurance is not fun.
No.
A lot of the things that I'm talking about on the podcast and we'll talk about, they're not fun topics. They're easier not to do.
Right.
They're easier to avoid because they're expensive and they're morbid, and they make you have to confront your mortality.
Right.
So what are some of those pieces of resistance that you get most frequently? And how do you, specifically Bethany, how do you counteract those, maybe with your own history and experience?
So one of the things that I probably have to overcome the most in conversations with folks is, oh, I already have it. Well, okay. You already have what? And people, whether it's a husband or a wife or whatever, it's I've already got life insurance through my spouse's work or through my employer or through, you know, we're commonly working with business owners, right?
Sure.
That's, if they're a small business owner, it's through their spouse's benefits maybe. Or they've got a group like health insurance plan that has some life insurance,
yes,
like group life insurance associated,
yes,
with it, or like group disability insurance or whatnot. The thing that I've had in my history on top of my mom's passing was my dad was, got extremely sick when I was in my 20s with a rare liver disease, and he was on permanent disability from his job for like 2 years.
Wow.
in his 50s and then was automatically retired after 2 years of disability with his employer. Well, okay. At that time, what he found out was that his $500,000 life insurance policy that he thought he had at retirement dropped to $50,000.
Whoa. That's a big,
and at this point, because of his liver situation, he's uninsurable. So one of the worst days in my career was him calling me, asking me if I could help him get more life insurance. And I'm like, no, Dad, like no one, you're uninsurable. And so what I tell people all the time is I'm like, here's what happened to me and my family. People think that they have something that they don't way too often. And so get the policies, and my advice is if it's through your work, go set up an appointment with your HR department and have them review your benefits with you or get copies of the policies of what you have.
To understand.
To truly understand what you've got. People just don't, I mean, to your whole point, Val, here, they don't talk about this stuff. So they don't know what life insurance is. They don't really know what disability insurance is. Like people think they have disability and it's short term, not long term. I mean, there's so many variations
so
in all of this stuff.
So many. And just the assumption too of, okay, my job has it, check the box.
Check the box.
So right. In your mind, you're fine.
Yes. But then I'll ask them, well, how much is it? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Is it permanent or is it temporary? I don't know. Well, not knowing if you have life or how much your life insurance is or how long it's going to last, those are the two first things we got to find out, right?
Yes.
What kind is it and how much do you got? And then we start going through what I like to just call meatball math.
Okay.
What do you actually need and what do you want for life insurance? And so then we just start kind of penciling out, okay, how much do you make a year? How old are you? How many kids do you have? Kind of getting the facts of their situation and how much should we reasonably have here? And then a lot of those conversations lead into discussions about estate planning. And
yes.
When I bring up estate planning, people are like, oh, I have that taken care of. I have a will. And there is so much more to it than a will. And
yes, there is. Yes. And that's going to be a whole separate episode because it is so confusing. Mm-hmm. It is so confusing. And again, easier not to.
Right.
Easier to check the box, think it's taken care of, and just set it and forget it.
Yep. Yeah, so I'd say that that's the first thing is just, I've already got it. Okay, well, let's figure out what it is. The other thing is you can kind of tell that somebody has got something in their health that they're like concerned about. And depending on how well I know this person, like I can sometimes just ask like, okay, like you seem a little hesitant here. Like, do you want to tell me what's going on? Or, you know, it's like, if you don't, that's
fine. How much
do
you cry?
Yeah, like, let's talk here. It's one of those discussions where if I can kind of sense that, I'm just like, look, I want you to understand that going through underwriting for life insurance, we may not get an offer. Worst case scenario, right? Whatever you got going on, maybe. I mean, you look great on the outside. I can never tell what's going on in the inside. But if you get an offer and you're not happy with the rate that you get, know that 6 months down the line or a year down the line, whatever the issues may have been, we can reapply and they're going to pull medical records and they're going to see that, hey, these problems have now been resolved and the doctor is keeping good notes. It can only get better. We will not take this away from you. And so that is just kind of giving people that reassurance.
Sure.
Like, oh, okay. So yes. It's only up from here. But step one is let's just get you approved for something.
Right? Yes. Yes. So if there's someone listening who doesn't own a business, or even if they do, what is their first step of trying to go find insurance? So I'll tell you my personal experience, and I think this is fairly common because I've heard it from several people. You have a friend of a friend of a friend who asks if they can set up a coffee for someone that they know as a favor, and you sit down with them, and it's someone selling life insurance. My husband and I did this, maybe a few months after we got married. And the person who sold it to us is no longer with the company. We have no idea. The amount's being deducted from our checking account every month. So I know that we still have that policy. So how do you, should you find one of those people
So,
or what's the best way?
Bethany and I were talking about this earlier, that the one of the biggest problems in the life insurance industry is exactly what you're saying, is that there's insurance carriers that do a great job, but they'll hire 500 students a year right out of college
right.
to go get their friends and family, and then they realize they don't like it.
Because they're selling life insurance.
Not fun. Yeah. Not fun. Yeah. No, not a fun conversation.
But the people who do it are 22,
yes.
23, 24. You bought life insurance. It's getting auto-deducted. The insurance company still gets that, whether that employee is there or not.
Yes.
And so what we've seen in our industry is, I think that there was a stat, and I'm probably making this up, but
we'll
like
add it
most
to the
facts.
He has a mustache, folks. He's untrustworthy. Yeah.
We'll add it to the show notes. If it's true, we'll link the source.
It was in a life insurance training deal. But at that point, and this is a few years ago, the average life insurance agent was 62 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's because it's an industry that doesn't have a good reputation.
Sure.
And it's been earned. And those who stuck with it have aged, and there isn't a gap, or there's too big of a gap. And so people aren't getting a review of life insurance because they remember that first experience when they were 22 and their friend came and maybe brought their friend's manager to sell life insurance. So you talk about it being a negative experience. It's so interesting that I've always seen it to be the other way.
Yes.
That it's a great experience. And when somebody gets to the point where they go, oh, I get it. Thank you. No one's ever explained it that way. Or nobody's ever showed me how to buy. And you go, it's not a scary deal. It's just something that you do as part of your life. And if you do it in a permanent insurance, oftentimes you're investing. You're putting money into a program that you have a cash value so you can see it and feel it and go, hey, I have money.
This is mine. It's an asset. It's growing.
Right. Versus just a term policy. And term is great. It's absolutely needed. But you say, where do you start?
Yes.
And that's hard because I'm in the industry, but I know that it's hard to find somebody you like and trust. I would say us.
Yes, yes, okay.
But otherwise, a lot of local insurance agents, even if it's your State Farm agent or your local agency, they will sell life insurance. And I think that's a much better avenue to talk to somebody who's been in insurance for a long time.
Someone that might help you with your car insurance, or your homeowner's insurance.
Correct.
Start with them.
Start there. Possibly even your bank. A lot of banks, because they require life insurance as collateral for a lot of stuff. A lot of your banks will have licensed agents there that you can talk to. But I think it's important that when you sit down with whoever it is, ask, you know, tell me about your background and find out a little bit about what do they know about it? What's their training been?
Yes.
And then find out who the insurance carrier actually is and do a little bit of homework on your own, or at least ask that person that you're talking with to give you a little bit of background on the financial stability of the carrier. Because you don't want your life insurance policy getting sold from one company to the other either. So, I mean, for those of you that have owned homes, it's like you've probably had your mortgage change bank hands 10 times over like I have. And the same can happen with life insurance companies as well. So
it's complicated.
It is.
And that's why it's easier not to do it.
Yes.
Yep.
So I'm writing notes here because I like to end the episodes with action items. So my action items, and you can correct me, interrupt me as I go through them. The first one is, if you think you have it, especially if it's through your job, talk to your HR person.
Yes.
Find out what kind do you have, how much,
yep.
and if there's a potential for that to change if your employment status changes.
Yes.
Whether you change jobs or retire or have to go on disability, does something change with that policy? Once you know that, have the conversation about what should you have? What would you need it for? The lost income we talked about, funeral expenses.
Mm-hmm. So you're bringing up a topic, and I'll try and keep it somewhat brief.
Yes.
But that's the biggest part. People don't know how much they need.
Sure. Well, let's talk about that.
And here's another one of those facts I'm putting in quotes.
Yes.
The average person who passed away from the World Trade Center bombings received over 20 times their annual earnings. And that was a government payment.
Okay.
Because it was terrorism. Okay.
And that was over 20 years ago.
when you start going, hey, what's
old.
The right amount? If you're sitting and you're going, hey, I have $250,000 of life insurance, that might be what you need, but it might not even be close. And so it's really important to sit down and go, what do we actually need? And there's so many great ways to discover it. There's meatball math deals, which I think are amazing. And then there's also just going, sit back and go, the exercise that I think is super healthy is go, hey, pretend that you or your spouse gets hit by a rich attorney. Okay? And you just got hit and killed by a rich attorney.
Mm-hmm. What will you sue them for? How much?
What will you sue them for? Yeah. Exactly. So you just lost your income from now till your kids are out of college. What does that look like?
Yep.
Do you want to pay for their wedding? Do you want them to go to school? Do you want your spouse to have to work full-time and skip vacations? So you go, no, you want the same life they have now or that you're going to provide. So that's your income. And you need that for 10 or 20, whatever the duration of time you need it.
Okay.
Do you want to cover your kids' college? Do you want to cover your debt?
Yes.
So it's debt, income, education, acronym DIE. Sadly, the life insurance.
Oh, that's terrible.
It's isn't it? Awful. Yeah. And I say it with a smile somehow. So
it's because he has no feeling.
He has no feelings.
No.
Just the facts, man.
Yeah, the facts. But if you do that and you go, okay, I would sue for, let's say I make $75,000 a year and I have a five-year-old kid. Well, I need 20 years at $75,000. That's $1.5 million. And I want to cover education, which is $250,000 when my kid's at school. And I want to cover debt. I have a $200,000 home. Yeah, that's $1.7 million. And you go, do you think your family deserves the same if you die of cancer?
Wow.
And so it changes your perspective on how much you think you actually do need. So it's meeting with somebody and going, hey, how do I do this? So you can abbreviate it, but most people are so underinsured to what their actual value is. And you start looking at it going, literally, it's a Starbucks a day can cover everything.
So say the acronym one more time.
Oh, debt, cover your debt, cover your income, and then cover education expenses down the road. Those are the easiest ways. Usually funeral expenses, as much as it's expensive, people don't, that's not a huge driver, but primarily it's your income that you're missing out on.
But I would say to that, if you do have a policy with your work, chances are it's not 1.75 million.
No.
It's probably not even a million or a half a million. Maybe it's 50,000 or it's 100,000.
High.
Yeah.
That you'll find. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And so, yeah, we often just try to advise folks to say, look, make sure that if you have life insurance, that it's the type of policy that if you're switching employers, because how many 30-year-olds do you know that have been with the same employer since they got out of college?
None. Where's the facts on that one? Do you have a percentage, Tim, to throw out?
Oh, my gosh.
This room on this side of the table, 100%.
Every time you're switching companies, you're risking that you're not even going to get an offer for group life insurance at that next place because maybe they don't have benefits or they definitely don't have the same. But make sure you have an independent policy. And some employers, you can buy it through them and get
it sticks with
rate
you.
But it sticks with you, so you can take it. So just make sure you know that. But the other thing is that, you know, HR, they're also not insurance experts. So just going to HR, you're more just getting the facts from them, get the policies, and then bring all of that with you to sit down with someone. And whether it's an insurance agent or potentially an estate planning attorney to say, here is everything we've got.
Is it enough?
And because on top of all that stuff, it's like one of the other expenses that we talk to people about, depending on the stage of life they're in, is their estate tax expenses that they're going to have too. Which
that's
again,
a whole
another
different,
episode.
Yes. Oh, that's a good time right there.
You can invite us back. But
yes, I will.
But if you thought that it is so complicated. So.
And I think that that's the big takeaway. There's a lot of pieces. There's a lot of layers. Every one of them is complicated. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't been through it or you haven't experienced it, good, bad, or otherwise, to even compare it, you don't even know what to do.
Right.
So that's my hope with the podcast. So I appreciate your expertise and your knowledge and your time in the conversation. I'm going to recap the action items one more time. Go to HR, find out what you have through work, if anything. Determine what you should have. Use the acronym DIE. Right, Tim? Yes.
There we go.
Okay. And then if you don't have a resource already for insurance, talk to your home or auto insurance agent. Maybe he or she will have a reference for you if they don't already sell that product, or talk to your bank, or if you've got an estate planning attorney, they'll be a great resource for you. Anything I missed? Tim?
One thing I would caution people. Yes. If you buy life insurance or any insurance online, you don't know the fine print. And usually that is the, hey, look how inexpensive. They're talking about cost, and usually cost associated with insurance. Any real good life insurance company and the strong, reputable carriers all have very, very fair wording. But you can buy discount life insurance that says, here, your health rating's this, but the second your health changes, now we can change our rules.
Okay.
So buy it through somebody. Don't buy it online, because you don't need a surprise when you're 55 and have been paying for insurance for 30 years to find out that it wasn't what you expected. So buy it through a person, unless you have no desire, single, and you just need it to get your mortgage and you don't really care and you're satisfying a certificate. Then buy the cheapest one. And stay single. And
stay single forever.
Forever. And don't ever worry
have
about
any relationships or about connections or anything.
Yeah.
Because when you're gone and done, nobody cares.
Right. So we're laughing about this, but you had asked about some of the objections earlier, and I just thought of one that I've been giggling about for years. As a guy said he didn't want to buy life insurance because his wife was beautiful. And I said, what do you mean? He goes,
what?
There'll be 10 guys willing to pay for her.
Oh, my God.
So you might have to edit that out, but you hear so many different...
I don't know that should make the cut. That goes in your edit, your
Okay.
It's on the cutting room floor.
We're digging into it. The comedy side of...
Stop talking. Yeah. Well, and it is helpful to find the humor in it, right? Doesn't it kind of come back in a way just to grief?
Mm-hmm.
And all of the layers, because if you are sitting across the table from me, 2 months from now, 2 years from now, 20 years from now, Bethany, it won't be you across the table, but very likely, Tim, that it is you sitting across the table from me if Doug, my husband, has passed away.
Yeah.
And you are going to be helping me through this process. And the facts are just what they are at that time, because I'm going to be as prepared as I can be and have things set up to the extent that I'm able, so that we can allow ourselves to be feeling at that time, because no one wants to think about this at all, really. But after it's too late, there's no opportunity to.
There's no going back.
There is not.
No.
So thank you both for your time and your expertise and your vulnerability, Bethany.
Yeah, thank you.
And even though you're a robot, Tim, I thank you for for sharing everything that you did as well. So
thank you.
And to the listeners, thanks for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed our first interview. This was great. So there will be more of these with subject matter experts. You're still going to hear occasionally, well, more than occasionally, from just me. But I thank you very much to you two. Thank you for listening, and have a great rest of your day. Deep grief sometimes is almost like a specific location, a coordinate on a map of time. When you are standing in that forest of sorrow, you cannot imagine that you could ever find your way to a better place. But if someone can assure you that they themselves have stood in that same place and now have moved on, sometimes this will bring hope. Elizabeth Gilbert.
This Side of the Grass is a Divine Fox production. All thoughts and information shared on this podcast are for entertainment purposes only and should not be considered as legal, financial, psychological, or any other professional advice.
I'm so excited to partner with Fountain Hill Winery. Guests of This Side of the Grass will receive wine from our friends at Fountain Hill in Delano, Minnesota. Many of you listening are from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, but even if you're not, if you're looking for a family-friendly getaway that's both relaxing and delicious, look no further than Fountain Hill Winery, nestled in the heart of Delano, Minnesota. Sip on handcrafted wines while savoring authentic Neapolitan pizzas made fresh to order. At Fountain Hill, the fun never stops. With events happening all year round, There's something for everyone to enjoy. From live music to seasonal festivities, their calendar is packed with excitement. Visit fhwandvineyard.com. That's fhwandvineyard.com to stay up to date with upcoming events. Come for the wine, stay for the fun. Fountain Hill Winery, where memories are made and laughter is shared.